It's 2:05 p.m. on January the 13th of 2011. Excuse me, 2:35 p.m. on January 13th, 2011. We're back on the record for OPA-PA-10-007. And we are here for the closing arguments. And Mr. Camacho, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Camacho. The purpose and the policy of the government of Guam procurement law is designed to promote competition, to provide a level playing field to lawmakers, and to ensure the quality and integrity of the procurement process. That being said, the procurement law is generally and must be strictly enforced to meet the underlying purposes and policies for the simple fact that the funds used to pay these services are public money. Public Law 26-111 required that any service contract issued by the government of Guam must comply with wage determination prevailing wages, to include the prevailing wage of $3.50 as it relates to health and welfare benefits to employees that are actually hired under the contract. In 2007, the government of Guam incorporated and codified these policies and requirements in Public Law 28-165, and it actually incorporated responsibilities of the procuring agencies to ensure that all the bidders comply with wage determination requirements. And that is codified in Section 5211 and the provisions set forth in that section. Passing the buck to J&B Modern Tech to address an issue submitted under protest and passing the enforcement of the wage determination to the Guam Department of Labor does nothing but call into question the quality and the integrity of the Department of Education's procurement practices. Because this is a case of first impression, we tend to look to the Federal Acquisition Regulations, which is issued by the federal government in its procurement practices, which do incorporate similar provisions, and in fact is what the Guam wage determination provisions were modeled after. Regulation 22.404 and all the other provisions set forth in that section of the Federal Acquisition Regulation requires, number one, that all solicitations incorporate the appropriate wage determination within the IFB itself, and that contracts must designate occupation titles to which the determination applies. Inclusion by reference is not allowed. Therefore, the contracting officer must actually select the occupation title to be incorporated into the IFB, and also require that the wage determination be incorporated into the solicitation itself. In fact, no sealed bid should be open or can be open until such time that all the bidders are made aware of the appropriate occupation titles that will be used in the IFB and the actual schedule that the IFB will use in determining wage determination wages. If in fact, under the FAR, the Federal Acquisition Register, a purchasing officer is notified of the improper wage determination, the contracting officer needs to delay that opening of that bid. And if the contract has been awarded without the required or proper wage determination, the contracting officer is required to terminate the contract. That is found in the FAR 22-404.9. In its pleadings, DOE states that, or argues that, excuse me, that the sole responsibility in regards to wage determination is the submission of a signed Form E, which is basically a promise to pay the prevailing wage. And it's not a demonstration of compliance as required by Section 5211B. In its determination of compliance, DOE also argues that by obtaining a payroll register from JMB Modern Tech, that they complied with the statute. Additionally, the procurement record reflects that that Department of Education failed to include the proper wage determination. A review of the IFB packet will assure this. The only reference made to any wage determination in the IFB was a requirement that Form E be submitted. GDOE also failed to include the occupation titles, and this is apparent by reviewing the IFB as well. Without the accurate wage determination and without the accurate occupation titles in the IFB, Department of Education could not objectively evaluate the bid submissions as required by Section 5211E. DOE also failed to conduct a responsibility inquiry to determine if the lowest bidder does in fact comply with the personnel requirements of the IFB. Page 20 of the IFB states that each district must have at least 10 employees. That would constitute about 40 employees for the entire island of Guam, as there are four school districts on Guam. Upon receiving that payroll register, it was clear that GDOE knew, as of September 27th, that JMB Modern Tech did not have sufficient employees. And nothing in the record indicates that further responsibility inquiry was made. Additionally, GDOE failed to conduct a responsibility inquiry to determine if JMB Modern Tech's bid actually complied with Section 5801 and Section 5802 of the Guam Procurement Law, as required by Section 5211G. In fact, in today's hearing, you will recall that Mr. Roman Canata of the Department of Labor testified that Department of Labor does not get involved in any pre-award discussions with the agency or with the bidders. And he does not make any determination as to whether the bid complies prior to the award with the wage determination. Also recall that Mr. Canata testified that in order to comply after award with the wage determination in its totality, referring to sections 5801 and sections 5802, the contractor must pay, number one, the prevailing wage as indicated in the appropriate schedule, and in addition to that, comply with Section 5802, which requires the payment of health and welfare benefits in any way, shape, or form. Recall that he also testified, and as you recall, we used the whiteboard for this, that in order to comply with the wage determination, for the occupation title air conditioning technician, the contractor must pay the prevailing wage of $15.76 and $3.50 for health and welfare benefits. This would mean that the minimum bid to comply with wage determination, as required by 5211G of the Guam Procurement Code, a minimum bid should be at least $19.26. JNB's highest bid was $17.45. Recall at the hearing this morning as well that the Acting Supply Administrator, Mr. Garcia, testified that other than requiring the bidders to submit Form E, promising to pay the wage, GDOE does not have any responsibility to determine if a bid complies with the waste determination requirements of the law. That is clearly contrary to 5211G. Recall that Mr. Garcia testified today that his decision to award the bid to JMB Modern Tech was only based on the aggregate amount and not whether the hourly rate was sufficient to meet the wage determination requirements as required by law. Mr. Garcia also testified that he only requested the payroll information from JMB Modern Tech after JRN raised the issue in its September 7th fax requesting for clarification. Recall that Mr. Garcia also testified that upon receiving the information, the payroll register from JNB, he made no further determination prior to awarding the bid whether the hourly rates complied with wage determination requirements. That being said, GDOE cannot be allowed to pass the buck to the Guam Department of Labor to determine whether wage determination in a bid is sufficient to comply with the Guam procurement law. According to 5211B, the IFB must include all terms and condition, and one condition of the contract is to comply with the wage determination. Breach of such provision is subject to contract termination. GDOE can also not be allowed to deny responsibility for ensuring full and impartial enforcement of the labor standards in the administration of its own contracts, because each breach of contracts, such as not complying with the wage determination, is cause for termination for breach. If GDOE's argument is true, that would make it feasible for a bidder to submit a low bid and later request for a modification of the bid price in order to comply with wage determination laws. This would place the integrity of the and quality of the procurement into question, let alone violate Guam procurement law. Entry of JNB Modern Tech's evidence this morning into the record should be given no weight whatsoever, as it is irrelevant to the issuance of IFB 007-2010 or the award of IFB 007-2010. In fact, it may show that DOE continuously awards bids to contractors without determining whether the bids comply with wage determination, and goes back to our argument that if they don't determine the wages are complying, bidders are allowed to bid low bid and then request for modification. In conclusion, the only decision that makes sense for this appeal is one that determines that the purchase order issued on October 15th is void by operation of law for failing to comply with the procurement laws. And number two, to terminate that purchase order, awarding the bid to JNB Modern Tech. And finally, to require GDOE to issue an IFB for preventive maintenance and repairs of central air conditioning equipment that does comply with Guam procurement law. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Camacho. Ms. Mooney, you have the floor for your closing.
Thank you. With regard to prevailing wage law here in Guam, it sets a minimum threshold that bidders have to meet as part of making their lowest and best offer, or lowest responsive and responsible offer with regard to IFBs. The law is rather new here in Guam, and that's what the section that I found, or the public law that came into question, where they added in that what we call Form E, the wage determination, was in January 5th, 2007, that form became applicable. There was no language in the public law added as to what the clauses should in fact be in the bid, that they're asking to be more. And there was no clarification of other forms or processes in the Guam administrative regulations. There have not been any updates in GAR, I don't believe, since 2004 that we found published. And DOE's procurement regs kind of mirror what's in the GAR. We respond to and follow the instructions of the Guam Attorney General's office with regard to our procurement forms that we use and attach to our bids. And with regard to this particular bid, we used the appropriate form that we received in February of 2010. And attached to that form is the then current wage determination level, which we heard today that those rates and classifications constitute the prevailing wage. And the rate doesn't seem to be in question at all. And it's $15.76, which would be the minimum threshold that would have to be bid on an hourly basis for the, and I think it's heating, ventilation, air conditioning technician. But we're clear on that. And it seems, as I listened to opposing counsel, we had differing positions. He's interpreting the law to indicate that $3.50 additional has to be added to that in order to meet what's required under the Guam laws in order for there to be compliance. What I heard Mr. Knott testify to is that the amount, the prevailing wage, is $15.76. There's that other requirement, which is $3.50 or $3 that could be additional, that's for the health portion of it and life insurance and those added aspects, but that those in fact could be met in other manners, that an employer could make a determination to pay that out of pocket if he did so in a manner that was compliant with what was required. And there could even be an additional amount other than the $15.76 and the $3.50 if in fact there was an H-2 worker or some other variants that would require the prevailing wage to be set at a higher amount under the Service Act. So it's a complex computation that is also dependent on the number of hours that an employee works and they're on the project sites and other things of that manner. With regard to DOE's acting in a responsible manner, they utilize the USDOE or the DOL's classification at the time of publication of the bid, and then when the bids came in, the actual classification amount for that position, 1576, was the same. There was a new version, I believe August 18th, that was attached to the W or the wage determination forms signed by the bidders. And if you read that through, they're actually saying that they're in compliance and will be in compliance with the wage law. And in particular, those two sections, 5801 and 5802. And then the actual abstract that's taken of the bids indicates what the threshold amount or the minimum amount, they can mirror that up to it. It's interesting in this particular case, appellant is an unsuccessful bidder, and they're asserting the requirement that things be followed with technicality, but they in fact are one penny under what the prevailing wage is on their own when you look at the abstract. And that is after they've been in the industry for a long time and have some history and understanding of all of this. And that's the same with J&B. They've both been in the history and, of the industry. So it's a complex equation that actually takes place. With regard to the proposals that are part of the record, you'll see that J&B actually indicates on their written proposal that they are going to hire more employees. They intend to hire maybe 10 more employees if they're successful on getting the contract. So you can't just look at the pay being paid to their employees as it's given to you as a true indication, because you don't know what jobs or projects those employees are on as they're being paid. But they do collect that information and obtain it, but the most responsible way of proceeding is to ask the additional information with regard to the benefits and to try to get that understanding of what the full package is. And that's what, there isn't just one way of doing that. What occurs in this case is not without some flaws as to how the procurement process desirably would like to proceed. We have federal funds, and our federal procurement process involves Davis-Bacon wages and prevailing wages, and we have construction contracts, and we have that. This is a local fund, totally local funded procurement, and it did not get caught in some of the same scrutinies. And this one unique, a lot of the times when we have a bid and we have the service prevailing wage act, the total bid amount is so larger, it's all accumulated and aggregated. With regard to this particular type of contract, because it's a maintenance, similar to like our custodian, there's an actual wage rate that they're looking at. So it doesn't come up as often and as frequently in our procurement process. And it is a relatively new process, time-wise, 2007, without the added written records and forms. And so we're in a learning curve constantly and are trying to seek to improve how we're doing. But under all the circumstances in this particular procurement, there was a fair and reasonable approach to the determinations made. When it was brought up to their attention that additional information should be sought or looked at, they went to J&D, who was the lowest bidder. They had made that analysis, and to determine whether or not it was a responsible bidder, they asked that additional information, and he complied. And it was not just the list of his wages and the amounts there, but in an email to Mr. Garcia, he clearly put forth how he was taking care of his health benefits and other things for his employees. And we heard Mr. Cannata today testify that that would be a valid approach if in bona fide being paid in that manner, but you know, that hasn't been looked at on a compliance level. So he added further credence that there was a reasonable determination by DOE that he doesn't even have the expertise Mr. Cannata has. So we went forward with an award in this after that information came in. The award, there was a protest, there was a stay until October 13th, and then there was a response to the protest of JRN. The stay was lifted, and the award was made on October 15th. The information came in from J&B on September 27th, 2010. With regard to this being post-award, we bring that to your attention in that J&B, who was a successful bidder on this, actually has gone ahead and hired the employees and started out in the work site, and has now has 2 months or 2.5 months of performance. Oh, goodness, yeah, more than that, as part of this. And has been relying on that we had proceeded in the manner. And we bring that to your attention because it's post-award, not pre-award. And we ask you to take consideration of that. Air conditioners for public schools are crucial, crucial procurement. And DOE's best interest would be to have the continuation of the contract that has been awarded. And that's with, if there were any imperfections in our process, we would state or hope that you would look at them as being insignificant in the total picture of things. Thank you.
Mr. Ben-Gayan, would you like to make a closing statement?
I would like to make a little further comment.
Sure.
In regard to this DOE risk determination, I would like to emphasize once again that our company our company was able to meet the requirements stated therein, and we didn't violate anything based on the $3 based on the regulation that you should bid at least $19 sum. It does not really required bid amount, because as long as you didn't bid below the minimum wage determination of the classified status of the employee, which is equivalent to 1576, which we did pay 1576 to all our employees. And you know, before this, we have a knowledge about this, because we have lots of projects. DOE, not only DOE, even at the other government entity. For example, right now we have a project at the judiciary building, which is falls under this category too. So we are able to meet all the requirements, unlike if you could see the abstract, unlike TRN, who bid 1575, and we went to DOL, the Department of Labor, about this, requiring about this. They said that a fraction of cent in the DO in the requirement is just a violation, according to the Department of Labor. So in our side, we didn't violate anything. Second, the 350 they are talking to be added to the minimum wage. It's not that you just, Roman just stated there that we could give that through benefits. And JMB, as I said in the first place a while ago, that we have this health insurance, and then we have this group life insurance, and then we have this 401k and other benefits like sick leave, vacation leave, bonuses for them, is more than enough to cover that $3.50. Based on the work of our employee, I have here with me a computation that not all our employees are working 100% to the job site of DOE. They are rotated. I mean, all the employees are rotating, working there. So most of them didn't finish or didn't reach the first 40 hours required. For example, I gave you an insight here. We have here helper. She worked only 3 hours. He works only for 3 hours. He works only 32 hours. He works only 24 hours. See, there are lots of here, and because they are, if they work today, tomorrow they be sent to other job outside this category, outside the DOE, which cover with this DOE prevailing rate. That's how we computed all our employees. So if we will follow this computation, it looks like we overpaid them for their benefits, because we cannot get, they are covered in life in their benefits, and then we pay them only three hours, 5 hours, or 20 hours. We pay them for the equivalent of 40 hours. So we cannot take it back. So our employee is more benefited in our benefits. Second, I just remembered this morning that the attorney Camacho said that in the pre-bid, this DOE waste determination was discussed in the pre-bid. I cannot remember whether this was discussed.
I myself was there in the Prebid the whole day, up to 2, 3 o'clock, I think, if I'm not mistaken. The center of discussion is the freedom on that day and other benefits that are covered under the terms and conditions of the bidding. But I never remember that we discussed the DOL, as he said early this morning. I myself, if the CIP give the minutes, I'm the one who talk much of these benefits, of all this pre-bid, because the other two company who attended, they just listen. I guarantee for that. Even you ask CIP, I explain to them all the subject matter that we discussed on that day, which is centered on Freon R22, the replacement of Freon R22 to R4108. Now, lastly, I hope that the enjoyment of the school to our services will not be paralyzed, or because it's really a detrimental cost for all those children who have this handicap, or those who are, because we have some, there are some schools that have children that needs air conditioning. So if we stop a couple months, then it's detrimental to their health. So I hope that by all means, this service that we rendered to the DOE, those children and the school must enjoy it, because we tried our best, and all those schools that we started fixing their repairing and cleaning their unit, they are so amazed and impressed the way we showed them to how we clean, how we repair their units. And I have all this statement from other schools here that they gave a personal opinion. So anyway, the assertion of the JRN is really solely based on subjective belief, opinion, and I think they don't need and fail to prove that they have a convincing evidence to this allegation that we don't meet the requirement. As I said early this morning, our book is open, widely open to anybody to come to my office and check our record that we really meet this DOL wage determination requirement. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bengayan. Mr. Camacho, any rebuttal?
Yes, just in response to opposing counsel's assertion that the wage determination was in fact included or attached to the IFB, the command record will show that none of the bidders received that schedule as part of their bid packet. Additionally, opposing counsel asks for consideration in order for them to comply with the Adequate Education Policy Act of the Government of Guam. And while that may be, air conditioning is dire in the public school systems, although I myself do not have any air conditioning in my elementary schools, but that beside the fact, It's still DOE's responsibility to comply with the procurement law. It's no one else's responsibility to procure air conditioning preventive maintenance other than DOE. So DOE's use of the Adequate Education Act, you know, does not supersede the Guam procurement law. Additionally, Mr. McNyan's assertions that they comply with the wage determination may be true at this point in time. But the question is, was the bid sufficient? Not whether he's paying the wage. And that's been the assertion of GRN since the beginning, is that DOE failed to make that determination prior to awarding the contract. Thank you.
Okay, we will take this matter under advisement and issue a decision within 30 days pursuant to Guam procurement regulations governing procurement appeals. Just a housekeeping matter now for OPA-PA-10-008. Is that next week Wednesday or Thursday? I'm trying to recall.
19th, Wednesday, 9 a.m.
Wednesday at 9 a.m. Okay.
January 19th.
Okay. Is that who we noticed?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The order, the notice of hearing has been distributed. But he can change it, you can change it. It's subject.
I have a 10-minute meeting, and we just think that we might probably take this too. Could they start it in here?
Okay, yeah, there's just a minor issue concerning 10-008, and that's instead of starting at 9, would the parties be available on that day, next week Wednesday, to start at 1 instead of 9?
Yes.
Okay. I'll...
1 o'clock?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay. So I'll submit the amendment to the existing scheduling order for that case. Okay? And that we are concluding.
I have one inquiry, Mr. Camacho.
Yes, please.
Would the panel entertain a possibility of a motion for waiver of a hearing on OPA 08?
Yes. Now, I think, trying to recall.
I haven't discussed that with my client yet.
The parties all have the option, okay, to waive a hearing, and then in that case, the case will be decided based on the pleadings, okay. And all it takes is a waiver. I believe in this case, I'm trying to recall, did DOE also request a hearing?
No.
No. So it was just your client. The appellant who requested a hearing, certainly with a waiver of hearing,
okay.
Then we will, that will forego the necessity to have a second hearing, and definitely we will then commence to decide the case based on the pleadings you've already submitted.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, but that's all it would take. Okay, otherwise, I'm still going to amend the order. I'm going to assume the hearings ago. I'm going to amend my existing order in that case just to move it from the start time from 9 a.m. to 1 o'clock p.m. that day. Okay? All right. And the next thing is the parties may, they're not required to, submit their brief regarding remedies. And that brief is due on January the 19th at 5 o'clock p.m. Okay? But you're not required to. That's just if you desire to. Okay. That being said, are there any other matters we need to address at this time?
No.
If not, then This hearing is adjourned, and we are off the record at 3:15 p.m. on January 13th, 2011. Thank you.
Thank you.